Have you been offered a rate lock annuity? Well, we're going to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of these fixed indexed annuities in episode 112 of the Atlas Annuity Podcast. Hi, everyone. My name is Marty Becker. I'm the owner and founder of Atlas Financial Strategies in St. Louis, Missouri, where we specialize in safe money retirement strategies. So we're going to talk about a rate lock fixed indexed annuity in this episode. And most people understand the basic FIA story. Your money is not directly invested in the stock market. And if the index falls, the annuity does not lose value because of that market decline. If the index rises, the insurance company may credit interest based on a formula. But there's an important detail that sometimes gets buried in the illustration. The cap, participation rate, spread, or any other crediting factor you receive today may not be the same one you receive at your anniversary date. And that raises two fair questions, okay? Number one, why do insurance companies change the rates? And number two, is an annuity that locks its crediting rate automatically a better deal? So the short answer to the second question is no, a rate lock can be extremely valuable, but it's not free. And I don't mean you're going to have to pay a fee for it. There's always going to be a trade-off because it does not guarantee the return of the index or the return of the annuity. It guarantees one part of the formula. So let's break down exactly what that means. First, let's get very specific with the language of what does a rate lock mean? Because the term is used in several different ways, so we need to separate them. It is not a new business rate lock, which protects an advertised interest rate while an application or transfer of funds is being processed. It is not an index lock, which may allow a contract owner to lock in a positive index value or credit before the end of the crediting period or your anniversary date. Sometimes that's also called a high watermark. A cap rate lock means instead of declaring a new cap rate at each policy anniversary, the insurer guarantees the cap for a stated number of years. Some newer products, for example, lock the cap for a full 5 or 7 year surrender charge period. Those are very different promises. So in this episode, when I say rate lock, I mean the cap rate itself is contractually locked in. It can never be adjusted. And what you want to do is always ask which cap is locked, for how long, and where is that guarantee written into the contract? Just a quick review of how an FIA credits interest. How does it gain value? So suppose an annuity uses an annual point-to-point strategy, meaning they're going to take a snapshot of the index value the day the policy is issued, and 12 months from that day, they're going to take another snapshot. And let's say it's tied to the S&P 500 with a 9% cap on it. If the index rises 6% during that year, then the annuity will credit 6%. If the index rises 14%, the annuity will credit 9% because of the cap. Now, on the inverse, if the index falls 12%, the index interest credit would generally be 0% for that period. Maybe there's a fixed interest rate in there, but not a negative 12%, assuming no withdrawals or any other type of contract adjustments. Another strategy may use a participation rate instead of a cap. If the index gains 10% and the participation rate is 60%, the credited rate or the growth would be 6%, so 60% of 10. Others may subtract a spread or use a trigger or performance rate or combine more than one factor. The exact formula matters on how the annuity is going to grow. And these crediting terms are not the same as index returns. They are the rules the insurance company uses to translate index performance into interest credited to your account value. Why do insurance companies adjust the crediting rates? Because it really is. It's just tempting to think that the insurer is simply choosing a cap at a later time that lowers your rate to improve their profits. And contract language may give the insurer discretion to do that. And carrier behavior, meaning renewal rates, should absolutely be part of the due diligence process. But the economics of why they do it, it's a bit more complicated than that. So I'm going to try and give you a simplified version. The insurance company receives the premium from the clients, the money you send them, and they invest that out of its general fund, mostly in bonds and other fixed income investments. The yield on those investments helps support the annuity's guarantees, their expenses, capital requirements by the Department of Insurance, and the potential index-linked interest. A portion of the available economics, often called an options budget, can then be used to obtain the market exposure needed to support the index crediting formula, basically how much growth that you can achieve. The client does not own those options and therefore is not directly invested in the index. They own an insurance contract, and the insurer is responsible for paying any interest required under those terms. And then the budget can change for several reasons. So reason number one, that they can change a crediting rate, meaning a cap or participation rate or a spread. The reason they can change that, number one, is interest rates and bond yields can change. So when the insurer can earn more on a newly purchased bond out of their investment portfolio, it may have more room to support attractive caps or participation rates. But when yields fall, the available budget may shrink. This relationship is not always immediate or one for one because insurers manage large portfolios, purchase at different times. But still, the yield environment is a major part of the FIA crediting pricing. If none of this is making sense, I've done some very in-depth podcasts on this subject of how this actually works behind the scenes. And I think if you go back to episodes 3, 4, and 5, I go into a lot of detail on how insurance companies make money. And it is not keeping the difference above the cap rate of what the index actually turned. Most people think that. The second reason those crediting rates can change is because of the cost of the index options. So market volatility affects option prices. When expected volatility rises, the options used to support index-linked interest may become more expensive for the insurance company to purchase. So the same budget may then buy less of the upside, which can then lead to a lower cap or participation rate. Option pricing is also influenced by interest rates, expected dividends, the length of the crediting period, and the design of the index itself. The third reason they can change rates is the index or crediting strategy has its own cost. A simple one-year S&P 500 point-to-point strategy does not necessarily cost the same as a two-year strategy or a strategy tied to a volatility-controlled index. Different designs require different hedges and produce different renewal economics, meaning that's why a crediting rate towards the S&P 500 may not be as attractive as a crediting rate towards a volatility-controlled or even one of these proprietary indexes, because the options that are purchase on the S&P 500 costs a lot more than these volatility-controlled indexes. The fourth reason is the insurer's expenses, capital needs, and profit targets change. An insurer must pay distribution costs, administration expenses, hedging costs, and claims while maintaining reserved capital requirements. And product pricing has to support all of those other obligations. The fifth reason is competitive strategy changes. Companies also decide where they want to compete. So one carrier may emphasize a high initial cap rate, another may emphasize guaranteed renewal terms, and another may spend more of the economics on an income rider or a premium bonus. So this leads to an important principle. Every product has a budget. If more value is guaranteed in one area, there is usually less flexibility or value available somewhere else. Or like an early mentor of mine told me, there are no deals in the insurance industry. Everything is based on math. If you're getting an advantage in one part of the annuity, it's being taken away from another part. So that's where the purpose of money comes in, so we can figure out what is most important for you and what are you trying to accomplish with this money. So let's take a look at some of the advantages and disadvantages of locking the cap rate. The first advantage would be greater predictability. You know that the cap rate is going to stay the same every single year. The insurance company will never adjust it. Number two, protection against declining renewal terms. Bond yields do fall and options costs rise. The carrier reduces the renewal rates on its other strategies. A contractually locked cap is insulated from those changes for the promised period. Number three, it gives you a more honest long-term comparison. So when the cap is guaranteed, a buyer can evaluate the upside limit across the intended holding period, meaning the term length, instead of relying primarily on the first year cap that may change after the sale during that first renewal term on your anniversary date. The fourth advantage is it gives you less dependence on carrier renewal practices. Financial strength remains critical because guarantees depend on the claims-paying ability of the issuing insurer, but a contractual lock reduces dependence on the carrier's future discretionary renewal business and their decisions for that specific crediting factor. I know this is a lot, and I hope you guys are keeping up. And we're using a lot of terms. And again, you can go back to episodes 3, 4, and 5, where I really dig in deep in very simplistic terms on how this works. But the fifth advantage is behavioral simplicity. Some clients do not want to review new caps, spreads, or allocations every anniversary date. A lock strategy can just make the contract easier to understand and manage, meaning it's just on autopilot. It's going to be in the same index the whole time, and we know the rates will not be adjusted. We don't have to touch it until the term is over. Some of the disadvantages to a rate lock fixed index annuity would be an initial rate that may be lower than an unlocked FIA. Again, because everything is a trade-off. So a company may be offering a 10% cap rate on the S&P 500 for an unlocked rate, but the rate lock option may be 8%. So it may be a little bit lower than what they're offering on an unlocked rate. So at the end of the day, that could prove to be useful, or you may have cost yourself a little bit of growth if that 10% cap stays steady throughout the entire term. Second disadvantage, you may not benefit if market economics improve. If bond yields rise or options costs fall, non-locked products may offer a better renewal term, meaning if they gave you a 10% on the first year and now their portfolio is doing better than what they anticipated, they could actually increase it above 10%. That does happen. It's not just always, oh, this thing's going to go down. It can go up as well. Some contracts may allow reallocations at an anniversary, but moving out of the guaranteed strategy could mean giving up the locked rate. The contract controls that part of it. A locked cap is not a locked return. This is the biggest misconception. If the cap is locked at 8% and the index is negative, the credit may still be zero. Why? Because the index didn't earn anything, but because it is tied to a call option and not invested directly into the index, your return would be zero. You wouldn't lose anything. But if the index gain is 3%, the credit may be 3%. The 8% cap is a maximum credit rate under that strategy, not a promised 8% return. The fourth disadvantage is the lock rate may apply to only certain strategies or premiums. Meaning you may only be able to get a certain index on a rate lock, and you may have to deposit a certain minimum premium to get the rate lock. Sometimes this is not always the case, but liquidity restrictions could apply. Maybe if they're giving you a really high rate lock, there may be a provision in there. Instead of being able to take 10% out, you can only take 5% out. Or if you pass away during the term, it may not free up the death benefit. Your beneficiary may have to ride out the rest of the term. So those are important details to pay attention to. Number six, other product economics may be less competitive. So a carrier that spends more to guarantee a cap may offer a smaller bonus, a less generous income rider, fewer allocation choices, or again, different liquidity provisions. So you have to compare the entire annuity to what something else may offer. But again, it really comes down to the purpose of the money. And number seven, insurance credit quality still matters. The guarantee is only as strong as the issuing insurer's claim paying abilities. And a rate lock does not turn an insurance company obligation into a bank guarantee. And again, it is not FDIC insured. Now, we've talked about the state guarantee fund and other podcasts and things like that. And just for my clients, we always go B plus or above. And at the end of the day, it's always the client's choice on what company they want to use. But we look at the letter grade, we look at the solvency ratio, and we look at the risk-based capital score. Those are the three things you want to look at for an annuity company's or an insurance company's financial stability. Seven questions you should ask before buying a rate lock annuity. Number one, what is locked? Is it the cap? Is it the participation rate? Is it the spread? Is it a trigger rate? Or is it merely the new business rate during processing? Number two, how long is it locked? Is it just one crediting term, a fixed number of years, or the full term of the annuity itself? Meaning, is it 5 years, 7 years, 10 years? Number three, is the guarantee in the contract or is it just an endorsement? Marketing material should not be the final authority. You always want to look at the disclosure. Number four, which strategies qualify? Does the lock apply to every index or only selected accounts? In my experience, it's only going to be selected accounts. And that could be the S&P 500 or some type of volatility controlled index. Number five, what happens after the lock expires? So what are the contractual minimums and maximum spreads? Now, Nine times out of 10, the lock is not going to expire until the term is over. So at that point, all of the money is liquid anyway. You can take it all out, move it somewhere else, or keep it with that annuity company. Number six, can I reallocate without losing the guarantee? Meaning, what choices are available at the anniversary? Again, in my experience, you have to stay within the rate lock. You cannot change it. If you do change it, that's up to you, but you cannot go back into the rate lock after you change it. And number seven, what did I give up to receive the lock? So compare the initial rate, the liquidity, the surrender schedule, death benefit, income riders, bonuses, and the insurer strength, not just a headline number. There's a lot of factors that we want to look into when making this decision. So in closing, the word fixed in fixed indexed annuity does not mean every number is in the contract is fixed forever. It generally refers to the insurance guarantees and the protection of the annuity value from direct index losses subject to the terms of the contract. The amount of indexed interest can vary, and unless specifically guaranteed, the cap participation rate or spread or whatever crediting factor may change at renewal or your anniversary date. A cap lock feature can solve part of that uncertainty. It can give the owner a known ceiling on indexed interest for a defined period of time and protects against future reductions in that ceiling. But also, the lock is not a guaranteed return. We have to be very aware of that. It may begin with less upside, and it may prevent you from benefiting from improved renewal economics, and it should never be evaluated without the rest of the contract as a whole. So the real question is not, does this annuity have the highest interest rate today? The better question is, which risk do I want the insurance company to guarantee, and which risk am I willing to accept, and what am I willing to give up for that certainty? And that is how you compare annuities as long-term commitments instead of short-term rate sheets. So everyone, I hope you found this helpful. Again, there's a lot of language in there. You may have to watch this a couple times to really grasp it. Or the easiest thing to do, if you have questions about annuities that have cap locks on them, is just to book a short time to get your questions answered at atlasannuity.com. That will take you directly to my calendar page, and you can book a short time and we'll do a Zoom call. We'll get your questions answered to see if what you're looking at is a good fit for you. And also, if you're within 5 to 10 years of retirement, or you're already retired and you've saved anywhere from a few hundred thousand to several million, give us a call over here. We can look at your strategy and do what's called an income clarity call to make sure that you are getting the most benefit out of your portfolio and have a solid foundation to build your retirement on top of. And again, you book that call at atlasannuity.com. If you're new to annuities and you just stumbled across this podcast, I'm going to highly recommend that you go watch my 5-part video series called 20% More Spendable Income in Retirement. That can also be found at atlasannuity.com. And just clicking on the videos tab, it should pop up at the top of that page. And as always, I want to thank you for joining us. If you found this information helpful, please like, subscribe, and share. And we want to thank you for sitting through episode 112 of the Atlas Annuity Podcast. My name is Marty Becker, wishing you all the best in your financial education. We'll catch you in the next episode.